Welcome to Combo Heals, the transformative mental health podcast.
We're three remarkable women from diverse backgrounds.
Join forces to harness the incredible healing power of conversation.
Each season, we embark on a journey
of exploration, empathy, and shared experiences
to illuminate the profound impact that thoughtful dialogue can have on our lives.
This is the podcast Convo Heals, where the conversation is healing. We are in season one, Parenting Whole. We're talking about parenting all season long. And episode three is here today. We're talking about intrinsic motivation. This is the heart of what it means to parent whole, finding who you are and creating a life that is built on your heart song, the song you sing in your heart. I'm Dr. Erica.
And I'm Dr. Brandy.
And I'm Dr. Raveau.
I'm so glad that you all are here for the conversation with us today. So let's get started. We are going to start, as always, with the science on intrinsic motivation. And as we've told you about in other episodes, every episode we bring you different segments that you can dive into. The science, the wisdom, and the practice. And we really want you to think about this as a conversation for you with you. So you might listen to one segment at a time. You might listen to the whole thing together. It's really up to you. We're beginning with the science on intrinsic motivation. So you all, when you hear the term intrinsic motivation, what comes to mind for you?
I get motivated. just in and of itself, I get a little energized. Yes. It could just be your energy, though, yes. Dr. Erica.
Oh.
It could just be you.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. I do feel like an activating energy, like what let's get something done.
Yes.
But
with excitement.
Yeah.
For me, it connects to that, that energy.
That on some level, it's not just like a cognitive orientation to the world. Mm-hmm. It's really cosmic or energetic or kind of, intrapersonal. Mm-hmm. Tell us what it really is, Dr. Erica.
I think it's all of those things. Okay. I think intrinsic motivation for all the folks out there is the motivating forces that come from inside. It's the experience of doing something for the sake of doing it with less of an emphasis on the outcome or a reward you'll receive or avoiding a consequence. Now, that is extrinsic motivation, the ways that we get motivated because of outside factors. We might do a thing because we're trying to reach a later goal. It helps us get to that goal, or because someone promised us a reward, or because we're trying to avoid a problem. So, for example, I have to be extrinsically motivated to do the dishes. It's my least favorite chore. I hate it. I hate it while I'm doing it. But I really don't want a dirty sink. I don't like how it smells. I don't like how it feels. We obviously, at the end of the day, I got to have clean dishes for my family, all those water bottles for school. Mm-hmm. So I do the dishes for extrinsic factors. But can someone name what's something you do from a place of intrinsic motivation? What would you describe as something you're intrinsically motivated to do?
I think the obvious, most palpable example is sitting here with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this podcast, while I think there could be really valid benefit from knowing that we're, contributing to people's parenting practices or you get notoriety or popularity or whatever. But really, the greatest pleasure is just, as cheesy as it sounds, sitting and conversing with the two of you. I mean, we do that all the time.
Yes.
We just happen to say, join us,
For me, it's connecting with friends over great conversation and things that make us feel aligned. It's very intrinsically motivated for that.
Yeah. And and I want to really capture what you both are talking about is the pleasure principle. Anybody want to sing that song to
I literally just had it in my head. You said that. Yeah. But I'm not going to sing it.
Pleasure is very much a piece of intrinsic motivation. But I want to push it a step farther because it's not just doing things that bring us pleasure. This podcast, for example, you know, this is our professional work.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so we are intrinsically motivated to do this podcast, yes, because of the joy in coming together, and also the very act of these conversations actually helps us grow. Mm-hmm. As people, as therapists, we know that doing this work, whatever happens next, mm-hmm. is impactful in the moment. This is an important piece of intrinsic motivation that we really need to talk about, because we don't want to confuse intrinsic motivation with necessarily only doing things that are pleasurable. Sometimes we are intrinsically motivated mm-hmm. to do tough things. Mm-hmm. This is not true about me, but some people, for example, really enjoy tough exercise, pushing yeah. themselves during the exercise, yeah. regardless of whether or not it moves the needle on the scale. Mm-hmm. They are motivated to engage in that kind of activity. So there's a couple of things from the research I really want to focus on here today, and I want to revisit our approach to the science on this podcast for everyone. I want to remind everyone, in other places, the internet, social media, other podcasts, what you're going to get as an audience member is maybe a single study or two that someone's breaking down for you. But what we really want to do here is really take a different approach, because there's a lot that we can misunderstand by only looking at one piece of science mm-hmm. or another. We've been doing this work for a long time, and we are really wanting to bring you perspectives born from the entire body of research, because it's really a dialogue yeah. among scientists that's been going on for a long time. And yeah. I think every person, every parent deserves to be able to connect to yes. that conversation, to understand mm-hmm. it at that level. So I want to really distill down a couple of things from the research about intrinsic motivation. One, which I think is like, I want to put like alarm bells on this. Mm-hmm. I want everyone to hear this, is that there's this developmental phenomenon. And what that means is that it's a fairly universal thing that happens, that seems to be tied to children's development. There's this developmental phenomenon that in early childhood, children are mostly motivated intrinsically mm-hmm. to do things mm-hmm. through experience. And that wanes across childhood. And by the time they become teens, intrinsic motivation to do things is very low. And the opposite happens. Young children are not very responsive to extrinsically motivating factors. Mm-hmm. And then it tends to escalate over time. And by the adolescent years, teenagers are highly responsive to extrinsic motivation.
Can I ask a question
really quickly? Please, yes.
And I have a hypothesis about this.
Yeah, do it.
That we're socializing that way,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes. That is the broad consensus
okay. mm-hmm.
from a lot of mm-hmm. scholars.
And more heavily in some cultures than others.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And especially in the United States, and I assume other places, but I understand the educational system in the United States best, mm-hmm. We are intentionally socializing this. Right. Extrinsic motivating yes. factors include adult, strictness, rule setting, even sometimes anger.
Yeah.
Extrinsic motivating factors include grades, test yeah. scores.
And no shade, but a little bit of shade. Giving everybody a trophy.
Yeah. right.
At the games.
Yes.
But so much of the domestication is around yes. making sure that humans' sense of worth and whether fear around being loved
yes.
is attached to those things. And yeah. it's the most, I think, effective ingredient in making people extrinsically motivated.
And it's also the most effective ingredient to marginalize.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Indoctrinate.
Yes.
Yes.
Could you want to say a couple more sentences about that? Because it's so important.
Well, just in a general way, I mean, it's a power play. Mm-hmm. Like whether intentionally or unintentionally, it's a power play. It's a way of manipulating behavior.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And,
yes.
you know, in relationship to fear.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And safety.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can capitalize on that.
If I can make you feel like you will be excluded mm-hmm. if you are different or you're not enough,
mm-hmm.
then you will be really motivated to do what needs to be done.
In order to gain favor.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And value again.
Safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. So it's a tool of power and control. Full stop.
Yeah.
It appears to be something we have to socialize, compel onto humans, mm-hmm. because it takes so many years actually to break them, work them out of mm-hmm. choosing experiences based on intrinsic factors. And we know that higher amounts of intrinsic motivation predict better mental health outcomes, less anxiety, mm-hmm. less depression, less behavioral problems. And we are in the middle of a children's mental health crisis. Mm-hmm. So we engage in these power and control tactics. We mm-hmm. socialize our children to be only mostly responsive to extrinsic factors for our short-term sense of needing power over others. Mm-hmm. But we are contributing to a big picture mm-hmm. problem for our own children and more broadly. So this is a big thing to know, that your children, your young children, you know, one of the reasons you have to keep upping the bribery with your little kids. And let's be honest, we all do this. The point of this mm-hmm. isn't to say never or to villainize anyone. It's that we understand what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Yeah.
But that is why little kids, it's really hard to bribe them or threaten them.
Yeah.
It's not because their brains aren't fully formed. It's not because they're dysregulated. A big part of it is that they're seeking meaningful moments and experiences, and they haven't yet learned that that's not how we like people to behave.
Well, and I think it's just, I'm so grateful that you're amplifying this, because they're just not moved in this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not moved in this way. And then it creates conflict and fissures in the family, and then we're all dysregulated. Mm-hmm. How is your baby moved?
I'm wondering just also naturally. With children that come to the world temperamentally wired to be more hypervigilant and anxious, are they prone to making that transition faster? Are they more mm-hmm. tuned into, because they're constantly seeking safety?
Mm.
And so are they tuning quicker into that in a sick culture?
Mm-hmm.
What makes people safe? Mm. And more quicker to lose that intrinsic motivation and become externally motivated. And you see these, you know, teens who are so perfectionistic,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
And anal about achievement and grades and which college you're going to go to. And parents often say, like, yeah, they were always really anxious.
I'm so glad you're talking about because that's a part of what we're here for, talking about the connection to health, well-being, and mental health and mm-hmm. communal health, because mm-hmm. It's such a detaching mechanism. Like, we get so, we're
self.
So disconnected
mm-hmm.
from our kind of like self-directive nature.
Yes.
And we get so disconnected.
We authentically are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I could not agree more that mm-hmm. we are really talking about how we create that disconnection. And I want to go back to what you were just saying, but I want to use, instead of the word safety, I'm going to use the word belongingness.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, as you know, I am very newly pushing back on this idea that we are seeking safety primarily first. I actually don't think that that's true mm-hmm. about humans. I think it's something in modern society we have created the need for, and then kind of socialized one another mm-hmm. to think it's fragile, and then so we need it. I think there's something complicated happening here about why we're over-focused on it. And I know you guys know this, but I want to tell the folks at home, another reason this sort of safety fear thing has become so primary in our popular conversations is because, as researchers, we've kind of messed this one up a little bit. That is the main emotion we study.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually just less information about other emotions, and it's for a really dumb reason. It's because fear is the easiest thing to mm-hmm. contrive in the yes. research lab.
Mm-hmm.
We get out our little motorized scary spider. This is real, you guys. I own one for the research I used to do. And we can scare people really quickly. It's really hard with our methodologies currently to figure out how to create authentic sadness anger, joy. We're working at it. But this is part of it, is that we've kind of overfocused on this kind of fear safety paradigm. But what you are saying, I exactly agree with. I just would replace it with the word belongingness, that children are constantly seeking belongingness. Mm-hmm. They're constantly looking at the people in their lives who they love and admire the most, yeah. who their little, you know, their little village, their people. Yeah. And they're saying, what are the rules here?
Yes.
What do we value? They're doing this as early as infancy. Our research shows us that as early as literally the earliest days of your life, you're trying to tune into the adults and figure out what are the rules of the road here? Yeah. And so, yes, there's this like dynamic thing that happens that children are tuning in to the adults. And if the adults are constantly making choices based on extrinsic mm-hmm. factors, mm-hmm. then the children say, well, that's what we care about here.
Yeah.
Right.
So in this entire conversation we're having this mm-hmm. season about parenting whole, intrinsic motivation is so at the heart of it, because in order for us to be able to, what was the phrase you used?
What moves my baby?
In order mm-hmm. for us to know what moves my baby, we actually have to know what moves us and show them how to live a life with intrinsic motivation centered now. We're going to talk more about this in the practice. I think there's a lot for us to talk about here, about how you live a life in this world as it is. That is successful and fulfilling and adaptive, but we have to at least make this part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And then not all have the privilege to be able to do that.
Yes, especially if we can only think about intrinsic mm-hmm. motivation as pleasure. Mm-hmm. That very much is privileged, right? So the other piece from the research that I want to highlight for folks, and again, I think we're going to talk about this a bit more in practice and go into detail more, but I want you to have this in your minds. Mm-hmm. The research really sort of narrows down three broad areas that people tend to find intrinsic motivation in. The first, we like to call impact, and people tend to seek intrinsic motivation, looking for a way that they can make impact in the world. This can be mastering a skill. It can be understanding your unique talents and traits and the ways that you make an impact on others and on the world around you. Mm-hmm. The second is in the category of innovation. People tend to have intrinsic motivation around something related to creating, inventing. And then the third category is the intrinsic motivation to relate to others, to love, to connect, to be in human-to-human contact. And I would also say, I think I actually want to extend that a little bit and think about human-human, human-self, and human-universe mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm. The science is so compelling. Because I'm still thinking a little bit about what Dr. Raveau said around, what you said around if our orientation to intrinsic or motivation is completely extrinsic and pleasure seeking and also achievement oriented. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that those are very restrictive metrics mm-hmm. for how to stay inspired or live inspired or wholehearted or whatever language we want to use. And I think when you talk about impact, when you talk about connectedness or belonging, mm-hmm. and then when you talk about, what was the other one?
Innovation,
creativity. And, when you talk about those things, I can't help but think about the cultural wisdom, mm-hmm. Which is another dimension of what we're going to do here. We talk about the cultural wisdom, which is essentially like, it's the soundness. Mm-hmm. It's the soundness, mm-hmm. the validity. And in this culture, we place so much soundness and validity on the science, mm-hmm. which is why a part of the what we want to, you know, make sure that we honor and respect here in this space mm-hmm. on Convo Heels is the cultural soundness
yes. mm-hmm.
of our behaviors and our actions and our choices.
Yes.
And those things are cultural. They're racial. They're yes. regional. They're familial.
Yes.
And so, and one of the ways that I think we, you know, name and share cultural wisdom, at least in my kind of cultural heritage,
yeah.
is around storytelling
mm-hmm.
and around, you know, sharing stories and passing stories down.
Yeah.
You hear these things all the time about the grandma's grandma's grandma who yes. did the thing.
Yes.
And that's where a lot of the wisdom comes from. And it's so specific and it's so nuanced because it's curated, it's customized, it's not overgeneralized.
Yes.
And in relationship to the science, I mean, there's so much magic.
Yes.
And so that's why we talk about it here. From the perspective of intrinsic motivation, it's so interesting. I think about flow. So in the field of psychology, we talk mm-hmm. about flow a lot.
Yeah.
Like when you're in flow and you're just like in a zone and you're just doing your jam
yes.
and hours go by. And, you know, we say these things. I'm kind of bouncing around because it's making me think of different things. But we say these things all the time. Time management.
Mm-hmm.
What about energy management?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are some things that deplete my energy
yes.
because I'm not in flow
yes.
and it's not connected to me.
Yes.
That doesn't mean that I can't do it. That doesn't mean that it's not valuable. But it just, it's almost like, what is my legacy in mm-hmm. a sense of like, what am I leaving behind?
Mm-hmm.
And how is that really connected to just the intricacies of who I am as an individual? So when I think of intrinsic motivation from a culturally wise place,
mm.
I'm imagining myself as a child. I can like visualize a picture and how I've always been so incredibly bossy. Like, I've always just thrived off of like
leadership, being in a leadership role. And
it's never been scary.
Yeah.
It's never been...
To be direct.
Yes. You know those mm-hmm. children that are kind of like, talk mm-hmm. about cultural norms, stay in a kid's place or mm-hmm. stay out of grown folks' business. I was mm-hmm. always sitting at the adult table.
Even like, before your mother passed.
Oh, before.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, you know, just... And my son does that.
Mm-hmm.
My son is just loves mm-hmm. to be around,
mm-hmm.
to learn and to talk and to share. He's not intimidated.
Mm-hmm. To contribute.
He's not self-conscious.
Yes.
He feels really invigorated by connecting.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. isn't threatened by the intergenerational kind of expectations around that.
Connecting and moving the conversation.
Yeah.
Towards a specific direction.
Before we get too far, because there's so many things I'm reacting to
uh-huh.
here, but I really want to just go back to something you said at first. I want to really amplify here that we are talking about finding your intrinsic motivation through your cultural values
mm-hmm.
and how we want to learn to separate that from performative,
mm-hmm.
extrinsic measurement. And something I want to say about why this conversation we're having right now is so vital. And I also want to say that I, as a Jewish woman, I have learned a lot about this from the cultural wisdoms
mm-hmm.
of Black female, mostly some men, friends and scholars. There's a very rich conversation, a very wise conversation that I have felt really honored to be able to tap into to help me find myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to really highlight here that what whiteness culture is devoid of, it is the intentional erasure
mm-hmm.
of those kinds of internal, familial, ancestral, cultural values. And this is a mental health risk
mm-hmm.
for people who identify as primarily white. And so it's something I think I hope everyone's ears are open.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when we say, when we name whiteness, it can feel accusatory
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
It's not something white people talk about, right? Is that mm-hmm. there is a whiteness culture that we are all swimming in, all of us in the United States. And this is a part of it, is do things that other people will validate, get more power and control. An A is an A is an A, regardless mm-hmm. of what was gleaned, what was learned,
yes.
what was applied.
Yes.
And mm. really getting into this conversation about our own cultural backgrounds, yeah. how we've learned to find who we are and live life from that vantage point, I really, truly hope it's been healing for me, is the point that I've been able to access this conversation. And I hope this brings about a lot of healing for folks who are listening and thinking for themselves about that.
Reflecting on my own Iranian heritage and within my culture of growing up in Iran until the age of 12, 13, what I observed were a collective internal motivations and what was external. And what really stands out to me was a lot around community and service and art, something with creativity. Mm-hmm. You know, like Iranians as a whole, they really value creating beautiful art and poetry and I think just creating things that are beautiful and getting lost in it. And so there's a lot of value for artists to seclude and to spend as much time as they need. Mm-hmm. And our culture really values that. There's a lot around...
I don't want to interrupt you, but before you move on, I would love to hear, since we're talking about harnessing intrinsic motivation... Mm-hmm. When you say this is true in Iranian culture, is it true for you? Do you have spaciousness here in the United States, in your life, how do you, or what can you say about living that?
I do feel like I have that. And I think, again, so much of it has been seeing it within my family. Seeing my mom and my dad feel really free and apologetic to invest a decent amount of time getting lost with artistic things. And what they've modeled to me is that shifts over time. So my mom right now, it might be with her plants. Mm-hmm. And with her, she likes to go to Salvation Army and find any kind of pottery that she can bring home and put holes in and grow plants in and how she decorates it, right? A few years ago, it was about something else. For my dad, is making jewelry or working with wood or working with metal. And for me, it used to be with painting and drawing. And then it has shifted into more like interior design or working with plants as well. Mm-hmm. So, but there's an element of like getting lost in it, and where your mind doesn't feel distracted. It feels really grounded in what's in front of you, but that you don't feel shame around it. You don't feel like I'm wasting time.
Y'all just rock my world, and I'm thinking a lot of things too. The stories that we're sharing, I'm sharing from a very individual experience. Mm-hmm. You're sharing from a communal and a familial experience, all incredibly valuable in how they kind of interconnect and interrelate. And then the transcendent experience where it kind of, you know, Dr. Erica, you talk all the time about like the aspirational values of the family and how that is passed down from family to family. It's just like in the fabric of the family. You don't necessarily have to teach it.
Yeah,
it's just understood. Yes. It's felt. It's expressed. You know, it's seen. And the word you used is there spaciousness for that in this, because we're talking about cultural wisdom.
Yeah.
There are conflicts here that I live every day.
Yes.
And I'm sure you do, too. Yeah. And I'm sure our viewers do. Around a white supremacist culture or a Eurocentric culture or whatever that you just named, where for me as a Black American has been kind of ostracized. So there's a threat to me and my family historically around leveraging and living freely within my flow or within my intrinsic motivation. There's a constant threat.
Yeah.
And you hear that in the language too. You got to be better, you got to be smarter, you got to be stronger.
Yeah.
So that you can belong and so that you can be safe and so that you can be successful, extrinsic, right?
Yes.
And so that you can be happy, pleasure. Yes. And then what's so interesting is in most cases what I found is it's actually so seductive and it rips you of all of it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It rips you of the joy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. We are not well as a society.
Yes.
And we have to reckon with that. Mm. As a Jewish person, something I've been thinking about a lot lately is that we are raised with sort of on the run. We're people on the run. All of our rituals are portable. We've lived all over the world, so to speak, and been up in societies, and then very quickly we get notice, so to speak. We've got to run again. Mm-hmm. And in my own life, I've never had to flee. But there is a way, as you say, this is like in our DNA.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so I think I'm very much motivated to make this life count. It always feels short and fleeting. And like any moment, things could change. Mm. And I have that in me. And living Jewishly very much means that you bring godliness into all moments. Am I treating people with love? Am I relaying to the world around me like I'm only here for a moment and it has to be a place that other people can live and love and grow? Mm. There is that sense of being small in the world and that your impact has to matter and that we give first. If we have to give, we give. And I really love that about us, and we're very curious and we're here to learn and we ask a lot of questions. But I'm sort of introducing this piece of it now in response to what you're saying, because there's also this kind of battle with the ways that make Jewish people, at least for me, this is how I felt, too serious for other white people, too intense, too much, right? And often when there's violence, it's because there's just this visceral feeling that there's like too many Jews taking up too much space. Mm. And we are sort of a very serious, emotionally intense people because of all of this in our hearts. And so I find myself doing battle in some ways. It's different than what you're saying in so many ways, but there's this conflict that we're always trying to maintain likability and at the same time make the moments count. And raising my own children and sort of really trying to speak to living my life from the perspective of Jewish values, being present, being grateful, means that I'm also kind of counseling them to live their lives in a vulnerable way, I think. Mm-hmm. There's a vulnerability to being somebody who is driven intrinsically and is making intentional choices.
Mm-hmm. So how does this show up in the practice?
Well, I think you started to talk about it and I stopped you when you were talking about parenting and your son.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, so I guess I'll initiate this. I think what's coming to mind is just simply the power of language. And, you know, most recently, my youngest son thinks he's the next, well, maybe he is. I mean, he doesn't have to be the next Cristiano Ronaldo when he can be Carter Johnson. That's my perspective.
Yes,
but
yes, yes.
He is like a soccer star in his mind. He is.
And in my mind.
And he lives this. Every day he wears the same soccer outfit. I'm like, you need a shower.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's kicking the ball every day. And when he's at his game, it's so much more like, oh, baby, the joy in you is so magnetic. Mm. It makes me happy to see you happy.
Yeah.
It makes me happy to see you in your element.
Yes.
As opposed to whether he won the game or not. I mean,
yes.
You know, did you win? Did you not win? What's the technicalities of the game? I mean, he's going to do that naturally because he loves it so much.
Yes.
Because he takes it so serious. So I think the practice for me is consistently around being conscientious about my language, and I don't do this perfectly, like, let's just be clear, but making sure my language is in direct alignment with my intrinsic motivation, which is that my baby feels connected to me, And that intimacy is not just enjoyable, because it always is, it isn't always enjoyable, but that it is, you're capable of it, mm-hmm. and that it's a right in this space. Mm-hmm. It's not a privilege, it's a right. Your mm-hmm. vulnerability, your the intimacy. And so just having my language, it's not necessarily always an activity. Mm-hmm. It's just the language matches, mm-hmm. you know, helping the intrinsic motivation bloom. Mm-hmm. And it's a fun practice, actually, because if I get it wrong, I can always apologize.
Mm-hmm. I have two questions that are one for each of you, and they're not the same, so just I'll throw them out.
Okay.
I would love to hear you, Dr. Brandy, talk more about energy management as a practice. I'm very mm-hmm. interested in that. And Dr. Hasti, tied into this conversation, something I was coming in wanting to really hear about from you. You're somebody who I always hear talk about living your life with purpose. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I wondered if you would talk to the folks about that a little bit too.
Mm. Yeah. I think from a very young age, I had this ability of tuning into, I think, human suffering mm-hmm. in a way that didn't make me shut down and made me want to feel more or connect more. I have vivid childhood memories around storytelling, because storytelling is a really big part of my family. It's something that people love to do over and over and over, and they will tell the same story of the great-great-grandfather over and over and over. And but the stories are not always about glory and achievement, and it can be really dark and painful too. And I would really feel it within me, you know, and ask more questions. And I think I remember being 10, about that age, and knowing that there was a power in that, and that it was going to be somehow my gift. And it is what led me to the field of psychology and the clinical work. But it's the same feeling of, again, as somebody with ADHD whose brain can be easily distracted, it feels, if you know, you know. It feels so good when your brain is not distracted, mm-hmm. right? And you're mm-hmm. fully present.
Yes.
And so I feel really, really blessed that my life's purpose is about service and around curiosity and understanding. And it's something that I get lost in it.
Yes.
And when I'm tapped in and I'm in that flow, I'm all in.
Yes.
And I think, yeah, as someone who, when I'm, you know, I don't have that experience when I am watching a movie or showering. I used to, actually, I told this therapist once, I hate showering because my brain is like, boom, boom, you know, like going crazy, right? Sometimes I wake up from sleep being like, what just happened? Like so much chaos. But when it comes to my purpose in life, which I think is not running away of the suffering that's in the world and settling into it with curiosity. Mm. Yeah, it feels that way. Very intrinsically motivated for that.
Mm-hmm. I am having a moment where I feel like I just learned something about you that I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And the way you express your story and who you are. Mm-hmm. And it makes me a little emotional. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like, I feel this way about you too. But in this moment, I'm learning something. It makes me feel a little like you're like one of my soulmates mm-hmm. or something. Mm-hmm. Because I would describe myself exactly the same. I mean, even to the age.
Mm-hmm.
10 years old. Mm-hmm. Even to the age. Mm-hmm. And I remember, and I don't remember this in a literal way, but this is a story that mm-hmm. is told to me all the time mm-hmm. in my family about how I've always been a healer.
Mm-hmm.
And at my mother's funeral, I was 10, and I was mm-hmm. very much like, her makeup's not exactly right. This is the right lipstick. Mm-hmm. And not bothered by a corpse or anything. This is just the way my mom should look. And my father, my godfather, I'd never seen him cry, they said. And well, I had never seen him cry. So, but I was consoling him, like going around and everyone that was hurting, I was consoling them. And it was very natural to me, I guess. I don't even really remember it in a real way. And so I think you're right. That kind of comfort in being a comfort.
Yes.
And it's just natural. And I think what feels so connected about the conversation we're having around intrinsic motivation is just how much it blooms and how cyclical it is. Because when you defined intrinsic motivation, you talked about the component of it that's around connectedness. And I didn't get here with my soulmates by sitting and saying, okay, what do I want to be when I grow up? What should I be? Should I be a psychologist? I didn't get here that way. I got here intrinsically. Oh, I love this class. Oh, this is fun. Oh, wow, somehow I'm able to remember these things and I can't really, I don't even know what that is. Yes. Oh, you know, and it just came to a moment. Like, you can trust it. You can really trust it. And energetically speaking, you kind of speak to this too. It's igniting. It re-inspires you. And what's so cool about that in relationship to purpose, my husband, the Dr. Joe Johnson, always talks about how, you know, pursue your purpose, not your dreams. Curate your purpose, not your dreams. There's nothing wrong with dreaming, but who needs a dream when you're carrying purpose with you? You have it already in you. There's nowhere to look. You know, just connect and acknowledge the threats for what they are. They're just threats. They're not facts. And in, again, to the energy, it kind of connecting to that helps me manage that.
Yeah.
And the only way you can't, there's no need for me to live an absolutist life, as you talked about pleasure. There's a black existentialism, which I believe that I am a black existentialist, recognizes a form of suffering or pain as a part of life, a very valuable part of life. You don't have to be afraid of that. And so we're not talking about pleasure. And so for that matter, on a daily basis, since we're talking about the practice, simply taking inventory. That's it. Like, what? I don't have to change it. What deplete? Okay, the dishes wear me out. I don't really like doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and this restores me. And then when you're quote unquote stressed, you know exactly what to do. This right here will give me life.
That's right. I want to add something to what you're saying that I think would be really helpful for the listeners' parents, because, you know, my son Levi, he's autistic, and his interests and the things that make him feel full are not what I think that the typical parent would think is valuable within our society. Right now, he is obsessed with car washes. Last year, this morning, him and I were talking about the theme. We realized the theme is water. Which is so funny because when he was little, he would love just watching water fall. And so last year it was sprinklers. Then the year before that, it was water fountains. But he's so into this. And as a family, we have been so committed to not trying to maximize what he's into and just celebrate. But let me tell you something. That has taken effort, right? And maybe as motivation to understanding who is this child in front of you, right? And then to when you are not motivated, then it can be so easy to push them towards fitting into that mold.
Yes.
And I think he's been such a blessing because he's motivated everybody around us. And I've had teenagers be around him and they'll say, he's teaching me how to be really direct. I would have a really hard time with that.
That's right.
And so I just want to acknowledge that for parents, it can be really hard to think about this, really hard to step back, really hard to do the work, to sit with the anxiety of like, I don't need to maximize everything my kid is into. Mm-hmm. I don't have to maximize mm-hmm. every possible potential, yep. you know, mm-hmm. Or like we're wasting time.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to emphasize that my family, from a financial standpoint at this time, has the luxury of being able to do that. And I can understand for families that are struggling financially, they don't have a lot of resources to feel like I have to push my kid to achievement so that they can go on to go to college to get that job. And so that I want to make sure they're not feeling guilty, because I understand why my family had to do that with me.
Well, I know that we're running out of time here, but I do just want to try to summarize a little bit and add to a little bit what you're saying, that what we're saying here is not that everybody should be kind of wandering through life, living by right. the moment. Right. We're talking mm-hmm. about understanding mm-hmm. at a minimum mm-hmm. that mental health is derived from knowing yourself and your heart and your values and living by them to the extent you can in this world, that's acknowledging right. there are conflicts. And when we talk about self-care, too often we're talking about distraction and disconnection from the everyday.
Yeah.
And what we're really talking about today is a thoughtful conversation about how you create a life you don't have to escape from.
Yeah.
To the extent that that's possible, that you see engaging in flow as self-care.
Yes.
Right? That it's meaningful and personal.
Yes.
And I want to, just as a last point, because this is so important what you're saying, that autistic people are gifted in this way, that they are not as sort of beholden to the hidden curriculum of life, where we've all agreed we're going to care about this set of things, mm-hmm. money, grades, achievement.
If the environment supports them, but they also can be domesticated.
Sure. But that's the point, is that it's a socialization process, and this can be a gift. And in my household, we celebrate the word weird. It's our mm-hmm. favorite thing to know about each other. Mm-hmm. What's your weird thing, right? Because that's what makes you you.
Yeah.
And yes, we are a neurodivergent household. We all have ADHD, but theoretically, we also could be living in the world trying to be normal, so to speak. So I encourage everybody to find their weirdness.
What's the fun in that?
Celebrate.
Find your weird.
Your weird. Mm-hmm. Let your kids find it. Be celebratory of it. We have an upcoming episode on joy, so I know mm-hmm. we're going to be talking even more about these things.
Yes.
Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us for this convo. We truly hope it was healing for you. Mm-hmm. It was healing for us. We had some great moments of healing today, mm-hmm. and we'll see you next time.
The convo doesn't stop here. For links to the resources and research mentioned in today's episode, head on over to the show notes at convohills.com/3. That's convohills.com/3.